film review.
Yes. I do need a little theme song, don't I? Now, I'm going to start with just a wonderful new film that's out this week, The Trip to Spain.
Yes. Now, I am very aware of this because I saw A Trip to Italy.
Yes, the and one then before. That preceded The Trip from 2010. So this is technically the third in the trilogy of Trip films.
Now, and they were actually miniseries on television, weren't they? That's where it came from.
That's where the original idea, and then they've done the miniseries each time, but then chopped it into a theatrical release.
Yep.
And it'd be interesting to watch the longer version, but I kind of love the fact that they kind of condense it to about 2 hours, anyway, between an hour and a half to 2 hours worth of beautiful food, wonderful landscapes, and all the English impressions that you can get, and Hollywood impressions actually as well, from Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon.
They're very funny, the conversation they have as they're travelling along, or sitting at a dining room table, because it is all about, apart from the scenery and the very funny impersonations that they do, as you said, but it's also about food, isn't it?
It definitely is. Food and wine. Yep. Although by the third one, Steve's given up the booze. So it's just Rob drinking that. Okay. But yeah, wonderful food and drink and all the best that these regions have to offer. And this one, you know, I've been to Spain myself, but never to these areas that are covered in this. So a lot of different areas.
Okay.
And they're kind of tracing steps of Don Quixote and travellers from
La Mancha.
Yes. Yeah. And,
do they see many windmills along the way?
Well, they do.
They do?
There's
right,
a very funny scene involving a windmill and the two. and I won't give that away because it is wonderful.
To but dream it's a the very impossible dream.
Yeah, exactly. That gets discussed as well. But it's wonderful the way it's sort of pieced together. It is a road movie, obviously, and it's just very calm and collected the way that they, and very cathartic watching these two characters kind of meander their way around Spain. It's just absolutely beautiful. I think I like this one just a little bit more than the original. I actually haven't seen The Trip to Italy yet.
Wait until you see that one. Because that blew me away.
Mm-hmm.
The scene, the Italian coastline.
Yeah,
Neil, you can't comment here because you haven't seen
No, I think I might have seen one of them on TV.
Right.
Well, because I know they're the two that actually, like Rob Brydon and Steve Coogan, but I can't remember which one I would have seen.
Like the Italian one, well, the scenery was spectacular. The music was, I was very moved by the music. And, of course, Italian food. Hey, hello.
Hello. but you're right, the music does play an important part. But this one isn't sort of, you know, littered with, you know, Spanish music. It's eclectic in the way it's put together. And it's from the same director again, Michael Winterbottom, who has worked with Steve Coogan in the past in sort of more traditional storytelling realms. He did 24-Hour Party People and a number of other films. He's been very proficient, Michael Winterbottom, and he generally works in very low budgets, which I'm assuming it's so he can do projects that he really feels passionate about.
Yep.
But he has done sort of mid-tier ones as well. But I just find him really interesting as a director. And this one, it's hard to explain it because it's not real life. It's sort of an exaggerated version of real life.
But they call themselves by their
name.
It's a bit strange, isn't it?
I love it, though. Yeah. I really do love that. Yes, they could have just done a documentary as is, and it would have been similar, I feel, but it's kind of, they get to play out their kind of rivalry a lot. So I wonder how much of that is real, because they're always trying to out-impression each other, whether it's Roger Moore or Sean Connery or even Robert De Niro, they do a lot. And they always come back to them. It's sort of this cyclical thing. They always come back to these impressions, and it kind of gives you an idea of the dynamic between these two characters, or these two men who are, you know, dealing with middle age. And there's a lot of funny things to be said about, you know, where they are in their life.
Yeah.
And it's funny to go back, you know, the first one was 2010 and this is 2017. The difference that 7 years makes in terms of, you know, outlook on life.
You keep on missing one, though. You know, there is one in the middle.
That's the thing. But going from the first one to the third one, you can see these stark differences.
Of course.
Rob's had another kid in the process, and Steve's still a bit of a
party boy.
Bit of a party boy into his 50s. And it's really interesting to see these two characters and the way they interact.
Okay.
So I really enjoy this one. I'll give this one 4 stars.
Ooh, good.
Maybe a bit excellent. More going back
because some of the other reviews I've been seeing around haven't been all that kind.
Well, this is what the interesting thing about these films is. I feel like if you love them, you know, you'll go with it. Whatever they're doing, these two men sort of talking. Like, I could have just watched them talking in a room, but then when you add in the food and the landscapes, it just takes it to a whole new level.
Okay.
But if you don't like their sort of, talking banter, with each other and the banter and their kind of one-upmanship, you probably won't get a lot out of it. Yep. You'll still get the other bits, but... It for me, it's very cohesive in the way that they're, you're living through these characters as they make their way through these beautiful places.
Now, so. I can't wait to hear about your next film because it's just getting the most incredible reviews.
And I've been itching to talk about this one. It is The Big Sick, and I actually saw this at the 30th birthday for Kino, but we were... sort of told we couldn't talk about it until the general release. We were embargoed until the release date, which makes sense, but I've been itching to talk about this one. It's a new one from Michael Showalter, but produced by big name Judd Apatow, but it's written by, and I'm not going to try and pronounce his last name because I'm struggling with this one, but it is written by
and starring
Kumail Nanjiani, and co-written with his real-life wife.
It's their story, which I find real. And they say that the story is... And as we were saying off-air, that I'm sure they've embellished a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's so exaggerated, this story, that they say you can't make this stuff up.
Exactly right. Yeah. It's that classic tale of boy meets girl, girl gets sick, and boy waits around until she gets better.
Mm. And
we've all been there.
Yeah, we've all been there. But the supporting cast, her parents.
Yeah, Holly Hunter and Ray Romano, who I usually don't like.
Don't like
roles,
him. Oh, but that TV show.
Yes. Couldn't agree more there, David. But he kind of fits this role. He's sort of the dorky dad and very protective dad as well. So he showed a bit more nuance than he normally shows in TV and films.
And
so
good to see Holly Hunter back.
Oh, she's just incredible, whatever she does. So I was really happy with her. And she kind of plays this sort of... very protective one as well, mother, who just won't have a bar of this guy trying to...
He's the boyfriend?
He's trying to say that he's the boyfriend and she is, incapacitated, let's just say.
Yeah, in a coma.
David, well, that's a bit of a...
Everyone knows that. I knew it by reading the review.
But yes, okay. The cat's out the back. She is in a coma. So most of the film, she is actually not... part of the dialogue. She's sitting there, but she and she's actually played by Zoe Kazan, and who of the Kazan sort of dynasty in Hollywood.
No idea who that is.
Oh gosh, David. But
no idea. Do you, Neil?
I do.
Google it, David. It goes back a few generations in Hollywood, and she is sort of the new actor of from that dynasty, and she is wonderful in the sort of smaller part that she plays, and a very important part. You've got to believe in that chemistry for that. I guess that the relationship to be believable that he would, feel so much for her in quite a short amount of time. Mm. So I really, really enjoyed this one. I think check this one out if you're looking for a rom-com that doesn't quite follow the rules. This one is quite a good one.
Excellent.
It's a 4-star film as well.
Fantastic.
Go check it out.
I'm sure it would be because, as I said, everyone's talking about it. So.
They are. Yep. And, we haven't seen a lot of romantic comedies on the big screen in the last few years. I think they got very stale after all the Katherine Heigl kind of style romantic comedies that came out. Exactly. And a lot of people just got over it. It's sort of, for me, it was kind of the superhero syndrome. So, but this one it kind of bucks that trend. So hopefully it'll actually spur filmmakers to actually try a bit harder with these romantic comedies. Mm. Should be about the story, not just about the romance. So go check it out. You are on Sunday Arts Magazine. I've got a lot more to talk about with film. We are in the middle of MIFF right at the moment. That's the Melbourne International Film Festival. I'll have more on that on Sunday Arts Magazine. it's all about MIFF at the moment for me. It kicked off on Thursday night with Jungle,
well,
the opening night film.
About for a lot of people, isn't
it? Yeah,
the queues around town.
Yes. Yep. And speaking of Q, LGBTIQ community, there's two films that I'm going to be talking about now that fit into our community's, our community and based around that. So the first one I'm going to talk about is Call Me By Your Name.
Brendan.
Thank you, David.
Well, you asked me.
I did. Now, this is a really interesting film to talk about, not just that it's amazing, but it's a new one from Luca Guadagnino.
He's my next door neighbour.
I thought so. But no, his most recent film is A Bigger Splash with Tilda Swinton and Ralph Fiennes.
Right.
And just stunning, stunning film, actually shot in Italy. But this is also shot in Italy, but in English. Well, it's actually a mixture. It's a bit of English, a bit of French, a bit of Italian, a bit of a beautiful mixture of different nationalities and languages. But this is his new one, written by James Ivory, who did a lot of the Merchant Ivory.
Yeah.
The ivory in that.
Yep.
So this is kind of this wonderful combination between this very interesting and celebrated writer and this visionary director from Italy who was actually at our screening on the Friday night. And I was telling you, I probably won't tell it, but it was a little bit embarrassing in the Q&A afterwards, a little bit uninformed or...
No. Somebody just trying to grandstand.
Yes.
That wanted to have the first question in the in the Q&A section.
Yep.
And the question was embarrassing.
Inane, let's just say. But Luca was a great sport and came back and
put it down even more.
put the viewer in their place a little bit of just saying, yes, you can have that opinion about my film, but... You might be wrong, which I love. What a character, and actually talking to Daniel from the movie show on Joy 94.9
on Monday night.
So he's going to have an interview with Luca, which I'm very much looking forward to.
Lovely.
Call Me By Your Name, it stars Armie Hammer as one of the main actors, and he's kind of been on the fringes of kind of success. He was in The Lone Ranger with Johnny Depp, and he's kind of been nearly there in terms of a Hollywood A-list, but
he's quite good looking.
He's very good looking, but he has got the acting chops as well, thankfully.
Right,
because
that film was so bad, The Lone Ranger.
It was dreadful.
Wasn't it?
Yeah. So we won't spend any time on that busted film. But this is the opposite of a busted film. It's absolutely stunning, but it's also sort of an unknown actor opposite him as well, and which is Timothy Chalamet. Hopefully I'm saying that correctly. And he's got a very tough role because he sort of plays the young ingenue, and Armie Hammer is the older, not old, but, older.
As old as me.
Well, he's still fairly young, but obviously older than this, the younger character.
Yep.
A bit more mature. So it's kind of this will they, won't they romance between the two during sort of summer holidays Italy. In a very specific part of Italy, which I still need to sort of look into exactly where that is. But Luca actually spoke about that because it is an adaptation of a novel from 2007. And so this was, the location was very specific within the story. But as you can imagine, this wonderful visionary filmmaker has shot this so beautifully, Luca. But it's a very bittersweet tale as well throughout. So this is, I don't want to ruin too much on it, but it is it's a 5-star film for me. Just thought it was stunning,
wow.
David.
So is it going to get a general release?
I would say so. Maybe not a huge one, but it's definitely very queer. You know what I mean? But it was a sold out. Session. People from a mainstream audience want to see it as well. So hopefully it does get a bit of a wider release than usual because it's a new classic. A Bigger Splash did quite well.
Yeah.
More in the art house circuit, but it got a decent release in Australia as well and then eventually ended up at ACMI. So
right.
I see the same thing happening with Call Me By Your Name, but hopefully a bit bigger than we have experienced in the past with his work. Now, the other queer film in the festival, and I should say, Call Me By Your Name, you can see it tonight if you're getting
run
really quickly.
Run.
I think there's only standby tickets, but
okay.
apparently standby tickets is okay. You might be able to get in. So have a look anyway. But another film which is showing tomorrow at 6:45 is God's Own Country, which I actually saw probably about a month ago in preview. And it's a new film from Francis Lee, written and directed by Francis Lee. This is another 5-star film, David. Wow. Seriously, we are doing so well.
Somebody else didn't think so.
I know. Yeah. Daniel didn't liked it, but didn't love it.
But a friend of mine saw it in Sydney, and she loved it and said, I should see it.
And it's a bit of a disservice. Everyone's calling it the British Brokeback Mountain and better than Brokeback Mountain. And I think it's unfair to sort of, yes, there are comparisons between the two, but to say it's like the exact same, it's a bit lazy.
I hate that when anyone compares, any form of the arts, where they go, they're the new come on, be a little bit more creative.
Yeah, because like the only similarities is it's a rural story between two men who, sort of fall in love or on the fringes of falling in love. They meet each other under interesting circumstances. Once again, I don't want to give too much away because it is about this love story between these two characters, but it's more than that. It's a story about the rural life. It's about family. It's about growing older. It's about legacies that you want to leave behind, because one of the characters' father in the film, or actually I think it's his grandfather. He's worried about leaving this legacy behind because he starts to become ill, and he's worried about what that means for his wife and his family, and for the farm that he's built over, his life and generations before. So there's a lot more going on, which I love, because a lot of these coming of age stories, it is a little bit on the surface. This goes really deep. Okay. So it is well and truly a 5-star film. One other film that I want to touch on as well, I went to last night, Tragedy Girls, my only specifically horror film for the festival.
It had to sneak in somewhere.
There.
But it's a film by Tyler McIntyre, written by Tyler and someone called Chris Lee Hill. And it's a very black horror comedy about these two girls who want to become famous serial killers. So yes, you've got to kind of go with that conceit in the film, because it is kind of outrageous and silly. And once again, I don't want to go into too much detail, but it's very much in the sort of Heathers, mixed with Scream, mixed with a little bit of Halloween thrown in there as well, but a very sort of postmodern take on what a horror film is. And right. I enjoyed it. It's a 3-star film. It could have been a lot snappier, but the performances are wonderful. So if you're going for the performances alone, and a bit of great gore as well.
Yeah.
You can do a lot worse than Tragedy Girls. Now, before we go, a big shout out as well to a wonderful production of Looking Glass at 45 Downstairs. I don't have much time to talk about it, by Lurie van der Geer. But check it out if you're looking for a domestic drama. It's a mother, father and child, and yellow plastic walls. That's all I'll leave it at.
Okay.
And a lot of drama involved with this little delinquent kid. Wonderfully staged, different staging once again at 45 Downstairs, completely different to how they had it set up for the last time we were there.
Yep.
So go check it out if you're looking for some Aussie drama. You're on Sunday Arts Magazine on Joy 94.9.